not sure it could. They say time heals everything, but I'm still waiting. I'm through with doubt. There's nothing left for me.
This is Karen Kotowski, and we haven't been to the show in a while. Been running reruns for several months, and I think now I'm back to somewhat of a regular shows with some good guests. There's lots of people that we need to talk to, a lot of new people, and of course some of the same people we've talked with before. And I want to encourage you people, if you're out there listening and you have some ideas on folks you'd like me to talk to or people you'd like to hear from, go ahead and email me. Or go to my Facebook and write something on my wall or something like that so that I can look to get some of these interesting people on the air. And, of course, I'll return to some folks that we've talked with before to see what they've been doing in the past 6 months or so. And one of those people that's been in the news recently, of course, that comes to mind is Sybelle Edmonds. We've talked with her before. And she's been seriously in the news, even in the mainstream news, which is hard to do sometimes when people speak the truth. But in any case, for this first hour today, on Wednesday, October 21st, we're going to be talking with Mark Weber. He's the director of the Institute for Historical Review. It's a nonprofit organization, and I'll read a little bit about this organization. It's been around for a while. And then we'll talk more about some of the controversy. The Institute for Historical Review works to promote peace, understanding, and justice through greater public awareness of the past and especially socially, politically relevant aspects of 20th century history. It strives above all to increase understanding of the causes, nature, and consequences of war and conflict. Founded in 1978, it's an educational public interest research and publishing center. It's nonpartisan, non-ideological, and non-sectarian. Located in Orange County, Southern California, the director is Mark Weber, and he's who we'll be talking with, a historian who was educated in the United States and Europe, and who specializes in 20th century American and European history. Privately funded, it operates as an entity of the Legion for the Survival of Freedom, founded in 1952, devoted to truth and accuracy in history. The Institute for Historical Review continues the tradition of historical revisionism, pioneered by distinguished historians such as Harry Elmer Barnes, A.J. P. Taylor, Charles Tansel, Paul Racinier, and William Chamberlain. The Institute strives, in the words of Barnes, to bring history into accord with the facts. And I think that's why Mark Weber will be a great guest for us as we relaunch the show here. Lots of facts come out, sometimes after power changes hands often. Of course, they say history is written by the winners, and it is. So the real truth about our history, and of course, what that means for the present and what that means for our future, is sometimes hard to find out, and oftentimes hard to articulate in the mainstream media, in the public, because we really don't want to hear sometimes the truth. So when you come back, stay with us. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with our guest, Executive Director of the Institute for Historical Review, Mark Weber. Please stay with us.
Hey, Jack Blood here, host of Deadline Live. I wanted to share with you my secret weapon in fighting the New World Order. It's a new product called Enerfood. Enerfood is bar none the best health supplement I've tried, and I've tried them all. With many ingredients like spirulina, chlorella, dulse, kelp, barley grass, alfalfa leaf, beetroot, orange peel, winter cherry root, it really is nothing less than superfood. I couldn't imagine having to shop and prepare all of these ingredients, but now I don't have to. Enerfood's done it for me. A simple scoop of powder every day is all it takes. No fillers, no miracle claims, no magic bullets. Just a real product with real results. Call them today and mention Jack Blood and get a special discount. Get the two-pack special with the coconut oil powder. Call them now, 1-866-762-9238. 1-866-762-9238. Or simply go to enerfood.com. That's E-N-E-R, enerfood.com. Tell them Jack Blood sent you.
You don't have to be in the military to enjoy military surplus savings. Right now at mainmilitary.com, you'll find savings on the top must-have military supplies. M10 gas masks for $12 or 3 for 30. Gas mask hoods, $4 or 3 for 10. Mask filters, $6 or 3 for 15. Save big on British chemical suits, only $12. Israeli gas masks, $20. Trigger finger gloves, $5 a pair or $36 a dozen. Snowshoe binding for $8 or $48 a dozen, and so much more. Even hard-to-find surplus items, all at surplus prices. Preparing the whole family has never been so affordable at MaineMilitary.com. MaineMilitary.com, one of the last surviving true surplus stores in the country. Shop now at MAINEMilitary.com or call 877-608-0179. That's 877-608-0179 today.
Most Americans know the significance of July 4th, 1776. However, few know the importance of September 17th, 1787, the day the Constitution was written and adopted by our founders. Unfortunately, over 200 years later, this sacred document is under attack, along with our beloved Republic. Throughout the span of history, brave men and women have rallied behind banners, which have served as symbols of liberty against the forces of tyranny. Today, we have the Constitution Pride flag to show our support for the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, freedom, liberty, and justice for we the people of the United States. Now available at www.1787flags.com. Get your very own Constitution Pride flag today and receive a free pocket Constitution with your order. www.1787flags.com, the official website of the Constitution Pride flag. That's www.1787flags.com.
No rules. No rules. No taboo topics.
No taboo topics.
No fear of doom.
No fear of doom.
We are.
We are.
American Freedom Radio.
American Freedom Radio.
Can you handle the truth? Tune into the Truth Brigade with Christy Chikowski weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. Central, only on American Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to American Forum. This is Karen Katowski, and in this hour, we're going to be speaking with Mark Weber. He's the director of the Institute for Historical Review. And just before the break, I forgot to mention, we do have a call-in number. We'll be taking calls. The number is 512-879-3805. And you can call in with your questions. If you have any questions for Mark, certainly we'll welcome those. Also, I forgot to mention, in the second hour today, we're going to be speaking with Timothy Baldwin. He's an attorney, son of Chuck Baldwin, actually, and he's written an interesting, a lot of interesting articles, but one of them on the Constitution, which actually falls in the category of historical revisionism, which is what we're going to be talking about the first hour with Mark Weber. So, Mark.
Thank you very much for inviting me to be on the show. It's a pleasure and an honor to be on with you.
Oh, well, thanks so much. I'm glad to have you. You were recommended by someone. I don't remember who. I got an email. someone I didn't know, but they recommended you, and I said, well, this sounds good. And of course, there's lots of things we want to talk about, not all of them controversial, but first off, I didn't have a whole lot of a bio for you, but can you tell us a little bit about yourself? All I've told the people is you're the director of the Institute for Historical Review, but can you share some more information about yourself first?
Yes, I'm born in Portland, Oregon. I was raised in Portland. I've lived in California for the last 15, 16 years. I was educated in Portland, Oregon. I went to high school there. I went to college, but I also went to a college in Chicago and in Munich, Germany. I also went to graduate school at Indiana University in Bloomington, where I got a master's degree in modern European history. I have a specialty in European and American history, and that's why one of the reasons I'm director of the Institute for Historical Review. I've been a director since 1995, and I've done a great deal of writing. I urge people, if they want to know more about what we're doing, to check out our website, ihr.org, which is, has a lot of interesting material. And over the last several years, we've distributed, I think, several pieces by you. And I'm very, very pleased to be on the show with you because I admire tremendously what you wrote and spoke about, especially in the period when the Iraq War was beginning. Mm-hmm. And I have often thought, and I thought this at the time, that if just 1% of the American public had the verve and the spirit that you do, our country wouldn't be in the mess it is today. And I feel very honored to be with you because I've been very impressed by your boldness and your willingness to speak out on those issues.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much. I appreciate that. You know, it seems like such a long time ago. I've been retired now since 2003, and you know, I don't go into D.C. I read, you know, the news like everyone else. Of course, I tend to read, you know, things that I'm interested in, which is probably contrary to what Washington D.C. would like us to read, contrary to mainstream in some ways. You know, I write for Lou Rockwell, and I read the Lou Rockwell stuff, stuff that might be on your website, antiwar.com. You know, Campaign for Liberty. These are the things that I go to, which means I'm in a community of perhaps more than the 1% you're talking about. You know, I'm in a community of probably close to 15 or 20% of the people in this country who are actually trying to find out what the truth is, I think. And I could be, maybe it's more than 15 or 20%, but I'm gonna stick with that until I'm proven wrong. You know, most, I think, people are pretty accepting of the stories that come out of Washington. Of course, the Institute for Historical Review, that's one of the things you're looking at, you know, at history. And before we talk about it, can you define for us what is historical revisionism?
It's skeptical history and truthful history. All history, all good history, is revisionist in the sense that we try, as I think all historians do, to look critically and skeptically at official history. And there's always a contrast between what the government wants people to believe and what the facts are, because the official view of history is to present a certain version that's in keeping with the interests of the people pushing it.
Mm-hmm.
People should always be aware of that how history is presented in society is not some abstract academic pursuit, but reflects very much who has power in society. And in our society, history is skewed to and distorted to reflect the interest and the agenda of those who have power in our society. And that's the way it has always been in history, and that's the way it is in our society today.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a tendency of Americans, I think, to just take their cultural and educational life for granted and to not think critically of it. But it's very important, because how we view history is really how we view ourselves and our place in the world. And if we have a skewed and a false view of history, then we really have a false view of ourselves and are unable to understand the issues and the problems and the great dynamic of what's going on in our society. It's really crucial. And I, when I talk about history, I mean not just what happened a long time ago. What we primarily focus on is history as it's related to the things that are happening now. Why? Mm-hmm. Why are we in the Middle East? Why are we in Afghanistan? Why are we? Why did the United States invade Iraq? Why do we have these problems we do? And to relate that to the background mm-hmm. so that people understand.
Oh, it's true. And when you're talking about that, I'm thinking of two things. One, years ago, when I first read the quote that history was written by the winners, and at first I didn't understand what that meant, and then later I did. And certainly, when you think about the American Civil War, you know, there was a winner and a loser, and of course the winner and Reconstruction and the whole bit, you know, all those things are controlled by those in power. Now, I grew up in the South, so I had some sense that maybe 100% of the truth wasn't, you know, wasn't out there, that the story didn't match the whole story. But that was a while ago when I was much younger. But I think back to when Ron Paul was running for the nomination, the Republican nomination, and you remember that debate where he was up there and they talked about 9/11? And and the other candidates or potential candidates, you know, Giuliani and these other guys, even Huckabee, all these guys were totally shocked that Ron Paul would suggest that there were actual, you know, that there was an actual history of American foreign policy in the Middle East, American behaviors, American actions,
right,
that could have actually caused a blowback. Now, of course, you know, the CIA knew what the blowback was. People that studied this understood it. But the American people were shocked, and feeding into that shock of the American people is Giuliani saying, well, I don't know where you get this stuff. Well,
right.
He gets it from the actual facts of the matter.
I remember that moment very well, Karen, and it's a very telling moment. I regard the claim made by the Bush administration right after 9/11 that our country was attacked because we're free and we stand for liberty as the big lie of the Bush administration. That lie might be pleasing to a lot of people to think that, but it is a lie. It's totally untrue.
And it's weird that he told that lie. You know, he made that proclamation, and many people embraced it in the emotional moment of and you know, the fact that they don't really know any better. People embraced that idea that they hate us because we're free. And then the Bush administration, with the help of Congress on both sides of the aisle, proceeded to pass the Patriot Act.
Which
actually made us, you know, in addition to violating the Constitution in many ways, you know, encroach even more on that so-called freedom that we were hated for. So in effect, I mean, if they truly hated us because they're free, then they totally succeeded in you know, attacking that freedom, because under the leadership of the Republicans and Democrats, you know, we have this constraint of freedom which we're still, you know, we're still living under. I mean, even to this day.
Right.
But I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, these are all very, very good points, and I mean, there's many aspects of it, but yeah, when our leaders lie to us like that and tell us lies, even if they're agreeable ones, there's grave danger in that. And as you pointed out, the consequences of our policies in the Middle East were predictable. They were predictable back in 1948. In 1948, President Truman was faced with the choice of even recognizing the State of Israel. And his own Secretary of State, George Marshall, who had been Chief of Staff of the U.S. military during World War II, the Secretary of Defense, James Forrestal, the head of the Near East section of the State Department, all told President Truman then not to recognize Israel, and that if the United States did recognize Israel, there would be long-term harmful consequences for our country and the world. And President Truman's decision to recognize, and this isn't even giving money to Israel, this is just recognizing this state.
Mm-hmm.
This decision was regarded by Secretary of State Marshall as a corrupt decision, because he was putting the interests of the Democratic Party giving in to the power of the pro-Israel Zionist lobby, even then, ahead of the interests of America and the world. And the warnings that were given by people in the State Department, and who warned that if we got ourselves involved in this, we would be stuck involved with Israel's conflicts and wars into the years ahead. Those were predicted even back in 1948. And as you pointed out, and as many others have pointed out who have experience with the Middle East, the consequences of our one-sided and perverse relationship with Israel were foreseen, and we're still seeing those the impact of those to the present day.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You know, it goes before Truman, of course, with activities of Britain and others. But the 1948 decision, this recognition, Truman does this. Think about, you know, two years previous to this, Truman. I mean, he's kind of not known for good decisions. You know, he drops these nuclear weapons on after the war is pretty much won in the Pacific. So Truman's decision-making process, I'm not sure. I mean, that's a whole nother show, and I'd like to get a Truman scholar and critic on at some point to really try to understand this. So there's that. But if you wanted to place his decision, of course, with the advice that he got that this would be a problematic decision on his part, he went ahead and did it for political reasons. But if you put that in a modern-day condition and you said, well, there's a country, there's a group of people, okay, who have been fighting for a while in a place that they moved to, okay, and with support of their allies, okay, and they've been fighting and using, you know, in what many people would call, and certainly proudly I think the early Israelis considered, counter an insurgency, a battle, much like our own battle, you know, of independence, something that the British called, you know, they considered us to be terrorists, because we employed the terrorist tactics that the weak always employ against the strong. But this is the initial history of the establishment of the State of Israel. On top of that, in 1948, this country was clearly bound and designed as a socialist country, okay? Almost communist, but there were some communists, but a socialist design. Think about 1948. I mean, socialism was not as popular even as it is today. Could you imagine Obama recognizing a small state that had behaved and established itself on these parameters? I don't think it would be done. I don't think in a modern sense we could even imagine it, but we don't think of it that way. It's as if Israel has always existed. But if you put it, I think, in present-day terms, it becomes a little easier to understand why so many of Truman's advisors, military and diplomatic advisors, would have recommended against it, because they would do the same today, I think.
Well, except that I think that now our government is filled with so many people who have accepted the false premises about Israel and our relationship with it, that they're much less interested in thinking and much less loyal to America than was the case in 1948.
Well, that's true. I'm talking about if another country, not Israel, and maybe not Zionism being the driving force, but let's say some other nationalistic or ideological force caused a group of people to seize some property, fight a insurgent war, and then declare them, you know, basically become an independent country, and then ask the United States to recognize them. I'm saying we would not do it. We did recognize Israel, and of course now, as you say, we have a whole other can of worms. In fact, I don't know if you saw antiwar.com today. Did you see it? I think it's today or yesterday.
I look at it almost every day, but yeah.
Sure. Justin Raimondo had a great article basically talking about the continued spying of Israel against us, and, of course, this latest little scientist that they picked up, who's spying for Israel, and how the mainstream media doesn't even talk about it. But we have this issue, this problematic relationship. I forget the name of Justin's article, but it's about a one-sided relationship.
Right. Well, one of the points that this highlights, I think, is that the United States permits Israel even to do things that are outrageous violations of our laws. Mm-hmm. In a way that we would not permit of any other country. This is particularly one of the things that most disturbs me is that many Americans who call themselves conservative are supporters of Israel because they've conflated and confused Israeli interests with authentic and real American interests. And it's a sad thing that Israel's strongest support among non-Jews in the United States comes from those people who call themselves conservative, because they, I think they secretly admire a country that kicks ass and whatever. But
well, sure,
whatever,
I think there's a lot of that, yeah.
For whatever reason, Israel's policies are contrary to any objective, I think, realistic American interest. And if we held, as I said many times, if we held Israel to the same standard that we have demanded and have acted on against Iraq or against Iran or other countries, we would be invading Israel. We would be bombing it, and we would hold leaders and capture them and put them on trial for war crimes. But we give Israel this pass that we don't give to other countries, even when they violate American law. Now, one of the best examples of that was made by former U.S. Congressman Pete McCloskey. He spoke at one of our conferences, and he talked about how during in the 1980s, when Israel was invading Lebanon, it was using U.S. weapons contrary to the agreements made between Israel and the United States not to use those weapons for offensive purposes. And the violation of U.S. law was at first denied by Israel and by the U.S. government, but eventually it had to be conceded because the evidence was found even in Lebanon and was produced and so forth. But so many Americans who consider themselves good patriots are willing to overlook even the blatant breaking of American law and agreements with the United States that make a mockery of what we claim to be in favor of as Americans and as a country.
No, it's true. It's true. I mean, you know, we talk about you know, the refugee problem in places like southern Sudan, but we won't mention a word about the Palestinian situation. Not a single word. It's pretty much a shame. It's a terrible shame.
What our leaders are trying to do is square the circle. They're trying to bring peace to a region while at the same time supporting the power that is responsible for creating the problem in the first place. And
that's true. We've got a break coming up. We're talking with Mark Weber. He's the Director of Institute for Historical Review. Please stay with us. We'll be right back in a few minutes.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At hempusa.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At hempusa.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from hempusa.org.
How would you like to cook any meal using no electricity or gas and cook your meals off the grid? Well, now you can, thanks to the Survival Oven. The Survival Oven is the most amazing off-grid solar oven that can cook anything that a conventional oven can without the energy bills. By condensing sunlight, the Survival Oven can produce temps up to 350 degrees, cook delicious and nutritious meals, sterilize water, dehydrate food, and so much more. All at zero operating costs. The Survival Oven can be used year-round, even in the coldest sub-zero temperatures, and is a must for emergency preparedness and even everyday use. Visit SurvivalOven.com to get your very own Survival Oven. Order the Survival Oven now, and we'll get you started with 2 cooking pots and a recipe booklet absolutely free. At less than 10 pounds, you can take Survival Solar Oven with you anywhere. Call 877-642-1553 or go to SurvivalOven.com. That's SurvivalOven.com.
Heart-related health problems affect millions of people each year. Maybe you're one of the many who suffer from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeat, or clogged arteries. There is a solution that doesn't involve expensive prescription drugs that only mask the problem and leave you with horrible side effects. If you are ready to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, then you're ready for Heart and Body Extract from Healthy Hearts Club. Heart and Body Extract has a 23-year proven track record of using certified organic herbs that make up an excellent formula to balance and support the heart and circulatory system. In as little as 2 weeks, you can feel amazing results when your 2-month supply of Heart and Body Extract today. Call 1-866-295-5305 or go to hbextract.com.
Warning. Warning. American. Warning. American Freedom Radio. Is habit forming. American Freedom Radio. Is habit forming. Use the truth carefully.
Give Big Pharma the boot. Listen in to Natural Answers with Darren Craddock and Steve St. Clair Saturdays from 11 to 1 p.m. Central, only on American Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to American Forum. This is Karen Kutowski, and we're talking this first hour with Mark Weber. He's the director of the Institute for Historical Review, and we've been talking up to this point about what historical revisionism is, which is really just critical history, looking at the true facts and adjusting our views based on what we find out to be true, and oftentimes power, the powers that be, whether it be government or whoever's writing the history, writes a history that is favorable to their interests. And so in all cultures, in all times, there's a need to go back and look very critically at what you've been taught as the historical fact. And then we're also talking about Israel and the kind of one-sided relationship today, in the 21st century, between the United States and Israel. And Mark, I wanted to ask you what you thought about the latest spy case that has come up. Have you followed that much?
We talked earlier about Justin Raimondo's take on that, and he follows these cases very closely. I think that he put too much emphasis on them in that over the years, he has predicted time and time again that this scandal or that scandal would finally just blow the top off the whole U.S.-Israel relationship, and it hasn't happened that way.
And it hasn't happened.
No, and I wrote a commentary after the arrest several years ago of one of these spies, and it was a kind of response to Justin Raimondo, and I said that what will happen is there'll be a brief flurry of media activity about it, and people will note it, and then life will go on, and nothing will really substantially change. And in fact, that's what happened. It was the Franklin case, I think it was.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Nothing happened. And you know, we were misled, and a lot of people who watched that, I know I was, and I heard from other people who believed this as well. It was thought that Larry Franklin was actually doing jail time because he had been sentenced to 12 years, and he did no jail time.
Well, and even if he had, life would just continue going on, because fundamentally, the political leaders of our country have put the interests of a powerful minority ahead of the interests of our country. Our political leaders are committed to supporting Israel, and they are pliant and submissive to this power. That's the way the system works in America. It's essentially corrupt in
well,
that.
I wonder. I think you're right. I wonder. You know, as our country, you know, economically goes down the toilet, which I think is happening in a long, slow decline. You know, already there is you know, individual people, families, companies, everybody's cutting back, and they're expecting their government to cut back. Do you think that's going to impact any of the foreign aid? Because certainly the greatest recipient of foreign aid and benefits and that kind of thing is Israel.
No, it will not substantially change that. No, I mean, it's been pointed out many times that we give much more aid every year to Israel than all of sub-Saharan Africa, for example. Israel is by far the biggest recipient. The second biggest recipient, Egypt, is only a recipient as part of a bribe to Egypt to have made the peace treaty with Israel. In fact, the aid to Egypt should be considered a deficit from or a result of our one-sided relationship with Israel.
That's a great way to look at it,
That's not going to change. That's going to continue because our political leaders have already made clear over and over and over again that they put that the interests of America and the interests of humanity are less important than their election interests and getting reelected. And there is no single ethnic religious group in America as powerful, as influential as the organized Jewish community. And that's going to, as long as that's true, as long as that power stays in place, there's not going to be any fundamental change.
Now, do you identify that organized Jewish community, do you associate them or identify them with what AIPAC, or are you talking about something that goes beyond AIPAC?
Beyond AIPAC. I include Jewish Federation, the Anti-Defamation League, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, the American Jewish Committee, the American Jewish Congress. All of these organizations are ardent apologists for and supporters of Israel and its policy.
The organization- the other thing about that, it comes to mind, I hate to interrupt you, but, you know, the critics of our foreign policy in many parts of the media and others are also happen to be Jewish individuals. And, you know, it's really hard for them when they criticize this. I mean, there's it's got to be tough because, you know, the anti-war movement, heavily Jewish as far as the actual activists.
Right.
But these folks, when they criticize the kind of mainstream position put forth by AIPAC and some of these other organizations, then they're considered to be not Jewish because their political view does not align, which is
tough. They're considered to be traitors to the Jewish community. And that's a problem because...
Yeah. It is a problem. I think it must be very difficult.
Yes. Well, years ago, I worked for and knew pretty well Alfred Lilienthal, who was an American Jewish writer who was critical of U.S. Support for Israel and of Zionism and its role in our society. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a number of very important books, including The Zionist Connection. And I worked for and I contributed to his newsletter. And, of course, he was attacked. Not only verbally, but also physically, and regarded as a renegade, as a traitor to the Jewish people or the Jewish nation. And therein lies the problem, because as a rule, I mean, in general, Jews regard themselves, or the American Jewish Committee regards itself as a community or a national group to which all Jews owe a primary loyalty and concern. And that's a problem, because that loyalty and that agenda is often in conflict with the interests of our people and of the world, and that's a real problem. It's a real heartache for Jews who are critical of Israel and its policies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that I didn't support. I'm a Ron Paul supporter, so I didn't support either McCain or Obama, but. Obama was elected pretty, had 60-something percent of the popular vote, overwhelming. So he rode to office. He's not popular today, but 9-10 months ago he was quite popular in this country. And yet he is not and was not from the beginning very popular in Israel, because they saw Obama, rightly or wrongly, and I think probably wrongly, but they to this day, I think, see Obama as not a good friend of Israel's government, not somebody who's going to knee-jerk support Tel Aviv's policies. But, of course, he has been quite reliable. And what comes to mind is that I think the UN had a report on the Gaza war. And in that report, Israel came out looking not very good because, there was some atrocities and overkill, a lot of violations of what we would consider international law and the laws of armed conflict, that kind of thing. And we, the United States, you know, did not back. I don't think we backed that support. We didn't back or support or endorse that report at all.
Right.
At Israel's request, because Israel came, you know, Israel was heavily criticized for its conduct in, you know, shutting off, you know, all movement and economic activity and just the slaughter that went on. And of course, using some American, money and American, military equipment. So, you know, makes it, we are part and parcel to, Israel's foreign policy in its own area, which
right.
is a real shame. So I think a lot of the Israeli opinion of Obama, it's negative. And I don't think it should be negative, because I think nothing has changed. I think he's very, you know, like you said, this is an ongoing trend. It transcends, I think, Republicans and Democrats, this one-sided, almost blind support of the governments in Israel.
Right.
But it's funny that Obama is not popular. I think that's kind of interesting, because he got quite a bit of the Jewish vote here in this country.
Right. Well, during the primary campaign, most American Jews preferred Hillary Clinton over Barack Obama.
Okay.
And during the general election, Jews supported Barack Obama in general over social issues. But mm-hmm. in Israel, the Israeli government made clear, and public opinion polls
sure.
showed, that Israelis supported McCain. I think what Jews are worried about, or what Israelis are worried about, is that Barack Obama has enough devotion to liberal principles that he may end up to be another Jimmy Carter. That is,
mm-hmm.
he'll support Israel, but at the same time, at some point, he may be critical of Israel's policies, because I believe strongly that if anyone has real principles, whether those principles are conservative or whether they are liberal, they must inevitably speak out critically against what Israel is doing, because what Israel is doing is a violation and an affront to both conservative and liberal principles.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's true. You know, one thing that surprises me, and this has nothing to do with Zionism per se, but Israel has publicly admitted, and it's been reported widely, and is believed, not just by their neighbors, but by the world, to have anywhere from 200 to 400 nuclear weapons. Okay, they are a nuclear capable country, not just with the weapons, but with delivery mechanisms, okay, with a range that could certainly encompass their neighbors. And they have submarines, which, of course, they bought, I think, three more from Germany or someplace. So they have a global capability in a sense. But this nuclear capability is ignored. They don't admit. They've admitted it, I think, in slips of tongues in interviews, but they don't formally, they haven't signed the non-proliferation treaty. They, you know, so here we are, United States, global superpower in the tradition that, you know, ever since the end of the Cold War, we are, you know, we're calling the shots. We're saying, oh, we want this, we want that, particularly in regard with nuclear weapons. We don't want proliferation. We certainly are on Iran's case when they even think about developing some sort of weapon capability, which it's not clear that they're doing, but we suspect that they are, so we say, hey, you can't do that. It makes us look really hypocritical when we're supporting Israel, you know, and we don't ask the same of our own allies. So it kind of causes, I think, our policy towards Israel causes us to lose the respect of the rest of the world.
Of course. Well, as I said, we hold Israel we hold other countries to a standard that we don't in the case of Israel. And the whole world understands this. That's why our foreign policy across the board is looked upon with such skepticism and such contempt by so many people, because we're not consistent. We do not uphold the principles or even the interests we claim to uphold as a country. This makes a mockery of our foreign policy. You know, with regard to Israel, we posted on our website the other week a document not classified not too long ago from the Nixon administration, a memo by Henry Kissinger talking about Israel's nuclear arsenal. And
mm-hmm.
in the memo, Kissinger acknowledged, of course, that Israel had, first of all, broken its pledge to the United States not to, quote, introduce nuclear weapons into the Middle East. Well, and mm-hmm. the understanding that most people in the United States government had was that Israel would not develop nuclear weapons. Well, with sort of typical lawyer-like rhetoric, Israel said, well, what we mean by introduce is we won't use them first. Or we will, well,
we won't introduce them formally.
Of course, oh but then, and in the memo, Kissinger pointed out that if the United States or the Nixon administration were to try to make an issue of this and put and publicly highlight this and pressure Israel to give up its nuclear arsenal, Kissinger pointed out that the Nixon administration would be subjected to tremendous pressure internally, domestically, here in the United States by the organized Jewish community, and that that was not going to happen. So this is a very dangerous thing. A small but powerful domestic lobby is able to skew our foreign policy against our American interests, against our principles, to benefit a foreign country that has its own agenda. This is very, very fundamentally dangerous. And this is borne out by not only this document, this secret document that has been made, has been declassified, but by many other governments. The Kennedy administration had a similar attempt to get Israel to abide by its agreements with the United States and with international law. And that's why the hypocrisy of the United States making a big case about Iran is so obnoxious, is so outrageous. Iran is actually a signatory of the International Atomic Energy Agreement.
And has abided by its commitments, which is interesting. You know, they have inspectors looking at their materials. They they disclose information, which of course Israel, as a non-signatory to the NPT, doesn't have to do. So yeah, it does seem strange that we would use our diplomatic energies to harass Iran, when really we might want to take those diplomatic energies and bring Israel into the NPT. Well, we've got the music again. We're talking.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. No one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Deadline Live and Jack Blood are proud to announce our new bookstore. Okay, it's not really our online bookstore where you can get every title, book, and DVD you hear about on our live show. It's brought to you by the people at Brave New Books. BraveNewBookstore.com is the newest, bravest, and most complete bookstore online today. And their DVD selection has all the titles you need to decode the New World Order and fight the information war. BraveNewBookstore.com has awesome t-shirts to proudly display your patriotism and liberty stickers to alert the public at large. Brave New Books is physically located at 1904 Guadalupe Street under the Chase Bank building. building next to UT in Austin, Texas. So stop on by and maybe stay for one of their film showings. Go to BraveNewBookstore.com now to peruse the virtual bookstore and look for the Jack Blood recommended section. Or call them at 866-516-6623. 866-516-6623 to order the books and videos you hear about on Deadline Live. Be the resistance. Tell your friends about BraveNewBookstore.com.
Yo, what's up? Check this out.
The voice of the revolution. American Freedom Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Open your mind and bend your paradigms with Jeff Rentz. Weeknights, 9 p.m. to midnight Central on American Freedom Radio.
Historian, author, lecturer, and current affairs analyst, and also director of the Institute for Historical Review. The website there is ihr.org, and you can check that out. And we've been talking about American, U.S., and Israeli policy. Mark, this is our last segment. We don't have a lot of time, but I do have a caller. I wanted to try to bring that caller online. Let's see if I can do that. Don't know if I can do that or not. Hold on a sec. Okay, hold on. Caller, are you there, caller? Okay, no. My mistake. I'm sorry, Mark. In this remaining segment that we have, what are some predictions that you have for American and Israeli
Well, the biggest relations. I think facing the biggest question I think in the world right now is the danger of war with Iran. That's the biggest issue, and either I think, given what happened so far, it's very likely that either Israel will attack Iran, and the United States will be brought into a regional war, or Israel will cajole or persuade the United States to attack Iran. This is very, very dangerous. It will be harmful to everyone. It will harm everyone's interest, and it will be a terrible thing, except for Israel. The only beneficiary of such a mad thing would be Israel, and I've been very, very alarmed that even some leading Republican congressmen have been saying that in order to protect Israel, the United States should carry out the attack against Iran rather than let Israel do it, because it will take the heat for this. But this will once again mark the United States as a rogue state, as a dangerous country.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's certainly, you know, our troops permanently stationed in Iraq, and it looks like permanently stationed in Afghanistan. You know, this is on both the west side and the eastern side of Iran. You know, plus we have our Navy in the south of Iran, so. You know, it looks to the rest of the world that certainly our intention is to do harm to this enemy of Israel.
It's hard to know. It's hard to predict for sure what will happen, because it's very difficult to believe that the White House would and the Obama administration would go along with something that terrible. But the overall thing is to remember that Barack Obama has less flexibility in foreign affairs than did Bush, because the economy is so bad. Right now, his focus overwhelmingly, and what the public expects his focus to be, is on trying to deal with our economic problem. Mm-hmm. And that's now so overwhelming that the flexibility in his ability to act as he might wish in foreign affairs is severely constrained, severely limited. So it's hard to see how this is all going to play out. And I don't see any good or easy answer to this, given the power that the pro-Israel lobby has in our country.
But yeah, it's true. Although you know, foreign aid, one thing that it continually is brought up, and it's never really supported in the House, which is the one that kind of authorizes money to be spent, but to put conditions on this extensive amount of billions of dollars that we give to Israel every year. To put some conditions on that,
Aaron, I don't think that will happen. If the Bush, Obama administration wanted to put pressure on Israel, the easiest way it could do it without having to go to Congress is to approve a resolution in the Security Council of the United Nations that would put some sort of sanctions on Israel. So far, the United States has a consistent policy of vetoing every effort in the Security Council of the UN to constrain Israel, to keep Israel from doing things that are blatantly illegal and harmful. And this is something that the president can instruct his
ambassador to the UN.
Right. For example, Obama has over and over called on Israel to halt the settlements, but he's never declared that the settlements are illegal, which they are. They're illegal even under the Security Council Resolution 242 that the United States supported in 1967. They're illegal under international law. But Obama has refrained from publicly stating that they're illegal, because that would then constrain him and compel him to then state that in the United Nations that we're not going to permit that. But I think we've already seen the limit to which the Obama administration will go in actually following through in any kind of principled way to uphold American and international law with regard to Israel.
Wow. Well, you speak of the economic pressures on this country. The bad news is history shows that when governments are in trouble, and oftentimes when they're broke, that's actually when they're most vulnerable to starting a war or getting involved in a war.
Right. Normally,
frankly, we can't afford one. We cannot afford a war in this country.
Right. Anymore. Normally, that's true, Karen. But the world opinion, and even in America, is so skeptical, so hostile to wars, because we've just gotten out of this disastrous mess with Iraq, and people are even fed up with our troops in Afghanistan.
Sure.
That pulling off a stunt like that with Iran, there would be universal condemnation.
It's very difficult
to see any because if Barack Obama was a conservative, or if McCain was president and he pulled out, he would at least have the support of his conservative base. But if Barack Obama were to sanction or carry out an attack against Iran, he would get no support from any significant portion of the population, neither from liberals nor from conservatives who already distrust and dislike him.
Yeah, that's true. And plus, didn't Obama just win the Nobel Peace Prize?
They might withdraw
that peace prize if he starts another war.
Right. Very true.
You're actually putting forth kind of a positive view in some ways.
Right. The big danger, I think, Karen, to conclude, is that Israel will carry out a strike and we'll be dragged into a war, which would be a terrible thing.
So we'll have to guard against that and do our best to make sure, that doesn't happen if we can. Well, thank you so much, Mark Weber. It's been great talking to you. And for those people interested, please go and visit the website for the Institute for Historical Review. It's IHR.org. And thank you so much, Mark. Appreciate
talking to you. Karen. Thank you very much. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Would you like to cook any meal using no electricity or gas and cook your meals off the grid? Well, now you can, thanks to the Survival Oven. The Survival Oven is the most amazing off-grid solar oven that can cook anything that a conventional oven can without the energy bills. By condensing sunlight, the Survival Oven can produce temps up to 350 degrees, cook delicious and nutritious meals, sterilize water, dehydrate food, and so much more. All at zero operating costs. The Survival Oven can be used year-round, even in the coldest sub-zero temperatures, and is a must for emergency preparedness and even everyday use. Visit SurvivalOven.com to get your very own Survival Oven. Order the Survival Oven now, and we'll get you started with two cooking pots and a recipe booklet absolutely free. At less than 10 pounds, you can take Survival Solar Oven with you anywhere. Call 877-642-1553 or go to SurvivalOven.com. That's SurvivalOven.com.
Heart-related health problems affect millions of people each year. Maybe you're one of the many who suffer from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeat, or clogged arteries. There is a solution that doesn't involve expensive prescription drugs that only mask the problem and leave you with horrible side effects. If you are ready to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, then you're ready for Heart and Body Extract from Healthy Hearts Club. Heart and Body Extract has a 23-year proven track record of using certified organic herbs that make up an excellent formula to balance and support the heart and circulatory system. In as little as 2 weeks, you can feel amazing results when your two-month supply of Heart and Body Extract today. Call 1-866-295-5305 or go to hbextract.com.
Can you handle the truth? Tune into the Truth Brigade with Christy Chikowski weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. Central, only on American Freedom Radio.
Prepare your mind to experience American Freedom Radio.
I want it!
Rents Radio with Jeff Rents. Deadline Live with Jack Blood.
The Truth Brigade. Truth Jihad Radio.
Liberty Cafe.
Weird Radio Russell Dowden. And so much more.
American Freedom Radio.